Welcome to the V-Wave Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by River Runners for Wilderness and is created by a cast of river lovers who understand the river resource comes first. On the shoulders of a healthy river, do we recreate ourselves? What comes second is river access, a very thorny V-Wave, all in itself. The V-Wave discusses these things and river ecology, recent river trips, river history, river management, and new changes on rivers. Have a topic you'd like to hear more about or help discuss? Get in touch with me, your host, Tom Martin, at rrfw.org. That's T-O-M-M-A-R-T-I-N at rrfw.org. Special thanks to Char and Trev, who came up with this idea. Welcome to today's podcast. Today we are visiting with Bruce McAlay, and Bruce is 75 years old now, but last year he was 74, how the math works that way, and he completed his 11th solo river trip through the Grand Canyon. And Bruce, welcome to the V-Wave Podcast. How are you today?
Well, thank you, Tom. I'm glad to be here, and I'll talk to you as much as I can remember about that trip.
Super, appreciate it. This isn't your first solo. You've done a lot of them. What is it about a solo river trip that enamors you so much?
You know, when I think about it, it just brings tears to my eyes. I ran the river. I'd hiked there for, you know, some decades, and every time I would find my way down to the river from the hiking venue, I would see these boats come down the river toward me. I'd wave at them and smile, and then they would disappear down the canyon just a few moments later. And I always wondered, what are these people doing down here? What are they seeing? What's happening? And so after so many years of that, I thought, well, I really need to see this river. I mean, this canyon from the river instead of just the trails, you know. And so having no river whatsoever was a problem. And at the time, there were 21 outfitters.
Okay.
So I thought, well, I'll just contact these people and see what they say. What have I got to lose here? Nothing. So I wrote 21 letters, handwritten letters, to each one of those companies. And mostly what I got back was, well, sir, we really appreciate your enthusiasm about it, but you have no experience and you need to work on another river somewhere and then work your way up to Grand Canyon, which I thought, well, that sounds reasonable. But three of those companies, Hatch was one of them, Canyoneers was one of them, and a guy named Kovalik was the third one. I don't remember his company. And they wrote letters back and said, we really appreciate your enthusiasm, why don't you come talk to us? They want to see you in person, you know, of course.
Yeah.
So one spring, January, February, I was timing it so that if someone liked me, they could hire me and I could go to work. So in about March, I decided to shut my business down, which was a good time to do that. There wasn't much happening in photography at that time. And so I got in my little Toyota pickup truck with a camper shell on it and was prepared to camp out for as many weeks as it took to go speak with these people. And the first one, the earliest one, was a company called Canyoneers. And so I rolled into Flagstaff and sat down with a fellow named Gaylord Stavely.
And what year was this, Bruce?
That would have been sometime in the late 70s. I'd have to go check exactly what year.
Okay, and I want to mention that you and I have done a
done a pretty extensive oral history, and that oral history is online at GrandCanyonAZUS.com in the oral history section. And I remember you talking about this.
Yes, it. You know, I was young and excited. Well, young for me at this point, I was in my 40s. And I go out there and I speak with, first guy I run into is Gaylord Stavely of Canyoneers.
Okay.
And he said, no, I don't need any boatmen, but I notice you have skill. You know how to weld and work on things. And I said, yes, I do. I can weld steel. I can't weld aluminum, but I can learn it. And he said, well, I need somebody in the shop, and I'll tell you what I'll do for you. You go to work for me and fixing all of this equipment that gets torn up, which it does. And if somebody gets sick or hurt, one of my guides gets sick or hurt, I'll pencil you in for a trip down the river. So I can guarantee you at least one trip down. And I said, well, that's good enough for me. So I quit right there. The first person I got to hired me.
And
I didn't have to go talk to Hatch or the other ones north of there. And so he showed me around the shop, and I met a few people, and there's no one there at that time of the year, really. And he liked me because most of his guides were college students, and they couldn't come early nor stay late. Whereas I could.
Right.
So I went to work fixing and welding and getting things ready for the season. And pretty soon it's just a whirlwind of activity. All these people come in from all over the place and things start picking up, and then river trips start loading out. And it's just a real big deal. And man, it got busy. And so anyway, I'm fixing boats and watching all these people come and go. The boats go out nice, clean, and pretty, and they come back trashed and dirty. And I have to fix them and turn them around within a week. Sometimes it's not enough time, it seems like. But at any rate, it goes on, and somebody got sick or hurt early in the game, 2 or 3 weeks into the season. He sent me down the river. Well, I wasn't very welcome because, you know, on the river, because I wasn't a guide, and the company people really didn't want me down there. To tell you the truth, you know, I'm not a boatman, but I did a great job. I jumped in there and did everything I could get my hands on, and it freed them up. They didn't have to work as hard, because I could fix stuff. And the guides gave Gaylord a good report on me and said, hey, this guy, he's pretty gung-ho, and he'll work on stuff, and he loves the river, and he's learning about it. So the first year working for Canyoneers, I went down the river 5 times.
Okay.
And I was expecting only one, but I actually went down 5 times. The next year, Gaylord hired me as a guide, and I in fact got my trip leader license and from the Park Service. When they were doing it back then, they would give you a card, and so I went and took the test and did everything and got my guide, my trip leader card, and I was guiding trips down there by the end of the second year. And that year, I went down the river 18 times. And that's a lot of river trips, let me tell you.
So who was doing the maintenance back at the shop?
Somebody else. I was doing what I could.
And so were you thinking about doing solo river trips at that point, or had that even shown up on your radar screen yet?
I wanted to do solo trips. I was a photographer, and I wanted to shoot photographs of the river corridor.
Okay.
And the only way for me to do that was to work for one of those companies. So that's how it started out. And then once I got the hang of it, I thought, well, I couldn't shoot any pictures while working for the companies because it's way too busy, and you're being hired for a job and you're expected to work 24 hours a day, and there is no time for doing photography. So I figured that out. Okay, well, I can't shoot pictures from the river at the company, so I'm going to have to figure out how to do this by myself. So I ended up buying a raft and running smaller rivers and working my way up. And at the time, it wasn't that difficult to get a permit. So I put in for a permit 1 year, and I got one. Actually, I knew the lady, Sue Cherry was the lady's name that was running the permits office.
Yeah, you bet.
And I learned a few things from her and got to know her personally. My girlfriend was an archaeologist and, in fact, went to work for Grand Canyon. And so there was that connection. And so anyway, she kind of told me under the wire that there was going to be a cancellation, or they were going to add, not a cancellation, they were going to add one river trip to make their numbers right. And that trip was going to come up on November 4th. So she said, if you call me at 10 o'clock, I don't know if I should be saying this, but she said, call me at 10 o'clock on this day. And if no one else has called, you can have that launch date.
And that was so November 4th of what year?
Oh, Tom, I have to look to see. 76 would have been 1978, I think.
Okay.
So, or right around there. Might have been early 80s, but somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay. And so, and since that time, you've done
11 total.
11 total to now. So by now, not only were you really skilled with understanding the river on your first solo, but now you've got 10 more of them under your belt, and you're coming in for September of 2025. As you can tell, I'm moving this along, because if we're going at this speed, we won't get through this podcast. And again, I'm going to refer people, if you're interested in Bruce's story, it is a fascinating story, and you can hear that at Grand Canyon, azus.com, along with 760 other oral histories waiting for you over there. So how did you win this permit? These are in September. That's a pretty high demand time to go boating.
Damn right it is. It's about as good as it gets. Almost as good as it gets. If I could go down the river and I had a choice of any day in the year, I would choose October 1st as the ideal launch day. But this one was September 2nd. So
why is October 1 ideal for you? And again, I'm going to say it's ideal for you because I wouldn't want October 1. I got a different ideal time. So why is October 1 ideal for you?
I went down on a trip with another group, and it was an October 1st launch, and the weather and the water was about as beautiful as it gets.
Okay.
The heat is not a problem at that time of the year.
Right.
And it doesn't get cold at night, and everything good about it. The weather is spectacular.
And the water is the warmest it's going to be as it's coming out of the dam there. It's starting to cool off slowly, but it's still really lovely and warm, so... Yeah.
Well, at that time of period, the water was not warm.
Oh, okay. When the reservoir was full, degrees. The water was cold. Okay, got it. But these days, it's warmer. So,
yes,
because the reservoir's down. Okay, October 1st is an ideal time for you. All right, so you've got a September...
September 2nd launch date, which is pretty damn good.
Okay.
And the reason I got that was... It came out of the clear blue. I knew that I would never get another permit, given the rules now that surround a non-commercial launch. which to me are ridiculous. But the truth of it is they don't want people going down the river that have already been down the river. And so they have fashioned the rules to basically deny people like me. So I'd given up on it. I'd been on the list and doing everything as exactly right for 9 years. And I knew that I would never go down, but I kept, you know, playing the game because why not? So anyway, I got a call in the middle of the day. I don't know what I was doing. I looked down at the phone and it says, big bold letters, Grand Canyon. So I'm thinking, well, what do they want? Did I not fill out some forms when I was working there or what? You know, I thought, this is not going to be good. So anyway, I answer the phone and it was a fellow named Matt from the permit office. And he said that somebody had canceled at the last minute. And he noticed that I had been on the list for 9 years. And was I interested in this launch date? And I thought, oh, man, September 2nd? Yeah, I'm definitely interested. But I got to talk to my wife about this because it's a big commitment. Can you call me back? So he said, yeah, I'll do that. So I went and talked to Shauna. She said, yeah, sure, you should go down the river. We'll work it out here on the farm. So he calls back. I accepted the permit. We got to work on it. And a week later, you know, after I'd built the boat and put everything together, it was day, night, day, and night, day, and night for a week. And finally got it together and hit the road. It took me 5 days to drive all the way out there from South Carolina. But I finally got there, and I ended up staying up in Page with a fellow that used to run the water system down there at Lee's Ferry. His name's Ken Hawkins. And so we went around and got my last minute bit of food, and on down to the ferry I went. And man, what a weird trip that was, as it always is. I mean, it's nothing out of the ordinary. Lee's Ferry is the Wild West, and it's never a dull moment. So I get to the ferry, and there's a bunch of New Zealanders there. There's that they're launching on a private trip also, same as me, same day. So it was fun chatting with them, and then there was a line of like, God, 12 of those yellow rowboats, and it was a big trip. And the trip leader marches over to me when I went down to my boat. Now I'm already rigged. I did all of that before I left, so all I had to do was launch the boat, and I'm ready to go. So anyway, this guy comes over and gets right in my face, I mean 6 inches away from my face, and says, you can't be camping at so-and-so beach because that's our beach, and if you're there, you'll have to leave. And I looked at him.
This is the New Zealanders doing this?
No, this is a commercial Grand Canyon River company. I think they were called Can-X. But the yellow boats—that's the—that's the way I know them.
Okay. And this is the trip leader on a commercial trip is coming over telling you you can't camp at camp so and so.
That's correct.
Okay.
So I was kind of astonished because nobody's ever told me that, and I looked at him and I said, "Well, that's not how it works down here," and He says, I don't care what you think about how it works. If you're at Camp XYZ, you're going to have to leave. And I said, well, we'll just have to see about that. I don't know where I'm going to be. You know, there's a million things can happen, and I'll camp wherever I need to camp.
What was the camp he was asking for?
I don't remember it now.
Okay.
But
okay.
It was early on because, you know, I'm going to leave at 7 in the morning. And he's going to leave at about 10:30 or 11 in the morning,
right,
once he gets his peeps in. So, you know, I had a 3-hour head start on him. And I thought, and I told him, I said, look, I don't know where I'm going to be. It depends on many things, of course. But if I am at your camp that you want to be at, you're perfectly welcome and encouraged to come in and double camp me. And
sure.
Then we can, you know, have some nice conversation with some new people. They can meet a solo rafter and it'll be fun. And he would have nothing of it. He said, no, we don't do that. And you just need to not be there. And then he walked away. So I thought, well, that was a strange encounter. And he went over and told the Kiwis the same thing and told them they couldn't be there either. So I thought, oh my God, this is going to be a weird trip. So at any rate, I knew that I would be well on downstream of that, but I just wanted to yank his chain anyway, just because he was being a dip about it. And so anyway, I didn't see them again until I was a half a day ahead of them, all the way down to Fern Glen, and I ran into them again. And I had my deal was I was there was some nice wet sand right there at Fern Glen, so my plan was to hike Fern Glen, look around, and camp there on that wet sand. And they come over to me in a group. The women, the three women guides, surround me and tell me that my camp is tacky looking, and that other boats going down the river shouldn't have to look at that, and you should camp up here where nobody can see you, and on. And I was just like, oh God. So I called over their trip leader, same guy, and I said, hey, Tim, if you don't get these women off my ass, I'm going to duct tape their mouth shut. And I wasn't kidding. I was getting serious about it because I was getting tired of it. And they all of a sudden got quiet and walked away, came back over, apologized, got in their boat and left. That's the last I saw them. So I don't know. Did they find out that I used to be a river guide down there, or was I too scary and they really wanted to get away from me? I don't know. But at any rate, they left. Thankfully, and that's the last I saw of them.
Okay, well, I want to go back for just a minute because you mentioned you'd been waiting 9 years. So your 10th solo trip was back in 2017, 2016. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So and just to clarify, so what the park does with their lottery is every year you don't go, you get a point up to 5 years.
Correct.
So it's a permit system that actually wants you to stay away. They give you more chances if you know less than if you know more. So you would have known your data would have been 9 years old when you got that permit. So mm-hmm. so you were actually biased to go, not biased to be kept away. In one way of looking at it. Of course, another way of looking at it is everybody gets a lottery and you may never win.
The only way to look at it is that it doesn't matter. Your points have no relevance whatsoever, because the way that it works is that it's a sophisticated system of permit clubs. And the advantage... The person who has the biggest advantage in the lottery is the person who has never been down the river.
Right.
In other words, a virgin.
Well, they get 5 points because they've never been down before. But yes. As the years go by, you accrue points just like you know, they start out with five, but because you hadn't gone for 9 years, you had 5 points in that lottery.
That's right. But it doesn't matter because the permit clubs are so far beyond anything I can do that the 5 points, it really doesn't matter. I'm not going.
Oh, you mean clubs? You mean like 16 people get together, they all got 5 points and they all choose a date?
Yes.
Got it.
Well, it's not 15. It's more like 30 or 40 people are in those clubs.
Okay.
and they all pound the system. And the virgins have the best advantage because they've never been down the river before.
Right, all the five pointers, yeah.
Yeah. So they go down every 2 years. Hmm. The average wait time for a permit club is about 2 years. Hmm. And at that point, they can send 16 people down the river. And once the people have gone down the river, they kick them out of the club.
I see.
And invite 12 new virgins in. And that's how it goes. So my chances against that are almost zero. The solo boatman has virtually zero chance given the normal system. Now, mine was abnormal. Somebody canceled at the last minute, which is pretty rare. And the guy looked at my name and saw that I'd been waiting for 9 years. He'd gone through a number of other, he went down his list. I was not on the top of the list. He had contacted 10 or 12 other groups, and none of them could go down on short notice.
Got it.
So he got to my name, called me up, and I said yes.
Sign me up. Let me check with Shauna, and she's okay with that. I'm good to go. All right. Can you tell me a little bit about your raft? What kind of raft do you have?
Well, it's a pretty spectacular piece of gear, actually. It's a 17-foot air cataraft.
Okay.
I prefer cataracts for various reasons, but this one was built like no other cataraft in that it is not a single tube raft. It has an outer tube along with an inner tube, so it's just like an old tire. The outer tube is real tough, just like a tire, and the inner tube is not. It's just an inflatable thing to hold air. And
okay.
That's what this thing does.
So when you look at it from the outside, do you see, on one side, do you see two chambers, or do you see one chamber that actually has another chamber inside of it?
Nah, it looks like any other raft. You can't see the other chamber.
Wow, okay.
But it's real tough because the outer material is 40 ounce,
okay,
which is pretty thick, and the inner tube is only 8 ounce.
Okay.
It's just like a balloon that's filling up inside of another tube is what it is.
Got it.
And you can't hurt it. If you hit a stick or something sharp, it has to go through really heavy material before it can even get to the inner tube.
Right.
And it never has. So
nice. And then
how have
you set up your frame?
It's a two-part frame. The big part has the oar locks and holds a couple of boxes. Then there's the small, the smaller frame is on the back, and it holds a bunch of other gear and a cooler and what have you.
Okay. All right.
But it's all on top. Nothing, about the boat, the frame, nothing sits down below the tubes. Everything sits right on top. So I can go over really big rocks and stuff, and it never even touches the frame.
Nice.
Well, handy is what it is.
Yeah.
You don't end up tearing up stuff.
Right, exactly. No, that's very good. I also wanted to ask you a couple details about just sort of the mechanisms of the things. One of the things that people often say about solo trips is, how do you pull into shore without losing your boat?
I don't understand the question. How do I pull into shore like anybody else?
Yeah. Then you've got to take a rope, and you've got to get that rope attached to the land somehow, either with a sand anchor, sand stake, or tying it to vegetation or a big rock. But the boat wants to go downstream because that's where the water's going. So you have to kind of get to shore and scurry off and get the thing stabilized and tied down.
Well, I got to jump off the boat into the water, usually waist deep, hang onto the raft so the current doesn't take it away, and then with my other hand, I untie a bow line. There's one on the front, one on the back, one on the side. I got ropes all over. And I grab a rope and then jump to shore, hang onto the rope, walk around till I find something solid, you know. Sometimes you don't find anything. And then I would never tie to a sand stake. That's only that's a temporary thing. I will tie to a sand stake and then continue on, you know, further up if I have to.
With a safety line that runs up to a harder anchor.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't tie to a sand stake.
Yeah. Sign me up.
So.
Yeah. Okay.
It actually is, you know, a three ring circus, sometimes just trying to get to shore and tie it off. That would be some great video there once in a while. Just watching this Keystone Cop guy try to get his boat tied off. But I do finally get it. And if I can't, I have to move on downstream.
Okay, well, let's go back to your trip then. So right off the bat, it's sort of an interesting contact.
Confrontational, that's what it was.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, at least very, because your feet probably aren't touching the ground. You're actually getting to go boating. You've got your camera gear with you. This is going to be a lovely trip. The weather's great. And then somebody's in your face saying, don't do this, don't do that. And you know the regulations, and you know what that person's asking you is not within the scope of the Grand Canyon National Park regulations. They do suggest that small trips, in the case you're a one-person trip, that you don't take big camps. That's a suggestion. It's not a mandate.
Let me elaborate on that a bit.
Yeah, please.
Before the guy comes and tells me that I can't stay somewhere, I have already gone to all of the outfitters up and down the beach and trying to find a trip leader and telling them, well, this was the day before, right? I got there 2 days early. And I'm telling all of the outfitters that I can find, look, if you see my... take a look at that raft. If you see that raft at a beach and you need a camp, you don't have to ask me about it. Just pull in and camp there. There's no negotiations necessary. If you see my boat there, you can stay. It's not a problem. And they were like, well, that's mighty kind of you. And they said, you know, if you see our boat camp somewhere and you need a place, you can come on in and camp with us.
That's really nice.
So I said, well, okay, great. Well, it's just courteous.
It's common courtesy. You bet.
And then for this guy to come along and just blow that whole thing, it's like, well, what's wrong with you, man? Come on. So at any rate, I talked to all the guys and said, come camp with me. And as it turns out, there was a whole bunch of that going downstream, me camping with commercial outfitters.
Cool.
I didn't need their food, I just wanted to make it possible for them to camp. And I enjoy other people's company. They're from people from around the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have interesting stories, and I like that stuff.
You bet. You bet.
So anyway, I took off the next morning at 7 o'clock, and the Kiwis, they were struggling. You know, this thing came together pretty quick, and it was a little bit scattered out. And, you know, it was basically a commercial trip. They had rented boats and rented, you know, a hired food, hired shuttle. You know, it was just like your average non-commercial trip these days. It looks like a commercial one. But anyway, they weren't going anywhere till about 11 o'clock or noon. They just weren't. So anyway, I got off at 7 and I'm honking, man. I'm going downstream having a blast. And there is nobody on the river. I've got the thing to myself.
Nice.
And what a lovely first morning that was. Had the whole day, didn't see anybody until about 2 or 3 in the afternoon when the first motor rig came by. And that was it. And that's the way I'd like all my days to be, but it's not how it works. But
yeah.
First day, day one was charming.
And how far down did you get?
I got down below North Canyon somewhere.
Okay.
I pulled into North, and it is just a snotty camp anymore. I like walking up to North, and, you know, it's a really pretty side canyon, and I won't miss that. So I walked up there and, you know, looked around, and but the pull-in there is now it's just so used that the pull-in is kind of a steep bank, meaning I'm going to have to lift heavy equipment up that steep bank and walk fairly far to find something flat. So I thought, man, I'm not doing it. I thought about it. That was my plan. But I thought, no, this is too much, you know, too much trouble. So I left North and went on down a couple miles and found an ice camp somewhere.
Okay. That's nice. And so that would have been a 21-mile day.
About that.
And the nice thing of that is House Rock Rapid is easier to run in the afternoon with whatever water the dam's going to let out than it is the following morning when you're running on the low of the day. Again, there's a tide that goes through as the dam releases water during the day and then turns it off at night. And
well, Tom, let me correct you a little bit that, because the flow rates at that time were running 8 to 10,000.
Okay.
Period. That's
okay.
It.
Oh.
So it's almost no difference.
All right.
So it doesn't matter about the tide.
Okay, very
there
good.
There is no tide, not 8 to 10. So all I had to do was avoid really shallow beaches, and that's it.
Okay.
So lovely. Anywhere else I parked, I didn't have to worry about it, which was nice. Normally you do have to worry about that, but not this trip.
Okay, lovely. Well, that's very good. Okay, so down below North Canyon, and then on your way the next day, where'd you go?
The Roaring Twenties.
Okay.
I got my ass kicked in there. I just, you know, wasn't paying attention like I should be, and got into one of those. I don't know which one. I lost my right oar. I had my oars in the water in the rapid, which I don't generally do. But, you know, I hadn't done it in 9 years, and I wasn't practiced. And anyway, the oar got away from me. It swept under the boat.
Damn.
And the current caught it and bent the oar.
Oh, wow.
You know, day two, now I have a bent oar. God dang it. And I thought, you know, it's going to take me 2 hours to change that oar out, maybe longer, because I've got these special counterweights on them and so forth. So I thought, nah, I'll just deal with it. So I rode the rest of the entire trip, the next 250 miles, with a bent oar.
Wow.
But it was all right. It wasn't bent that bad, probably about 3 degrees.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's not too bad.
It's just tacky looking.
Yeah, but somebody have to look hard to say, you know, those old oars are bent. There's something different there.
Well, you didn't have to look hard at this. It was bent,
okay,
obviously. But it didn't. It wasn't bent enough that it would be weak. And if I tried to bend it back, it would become weak.
Right.
So I left it.
That's good thinking.
Yeah, I didn't want to break it, so.
Yeah, yeah.
I just left it that way.
Where'd you camp that night?
It was pretty funny looking. Where did I camp?
Yeah.
I don't even know.
Okay.
I didn't know where I was. The 20s come so fast, it's hard for me to remember where all the camps and rapids are.
Did you get down past South Canyon, Redwall Cavern, down that
way? No,
not that far.
I didn't get that far.
Okay.
No. I got down below North Canyon and
right.
camp somewhere.
Right. No, I'm talking about the next day after North. Day? Yeah, you went down through through the Roaring Twenties, okay, right, Bench Roar.
Okay, so the 20s, I would have made it down to somewhere around 40 Mile. I don't remember what's in there.
Okay.
Redwall is what, 50 Mile?
No. It's 33. I'm going to just say for fun.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't stop in there. I've been there so many times.
Okay.
Didn't need to stop in there. It's a cool place. There's no doubt about it.
So, if you're was that your plan to make about 20 miles a day, and so you're going to run you're going all the way to Pierce Ferry, that means you're going to be running a 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 day trip.
20 day.
20 by 20 is 400.
That's right.
So you're going to have to stop somewhere and chill out.
Or slow down. Going down. I just went on down to the Sea of Cortez.
Oh, you did. All right. Wait, what?
Well, the reason for that, I wanted to make 20 miles a day because ideally I would like to lay over every day.
Okay.
And I did that quite often. So I would hump on it and try and make my 20 miles, 18 to 22 miles a day, and then stop and lay over.
Nice.
And try to end up someplace that I could, you know, do a nice all-day side hike and you know, really see and enjoy the canyon. And that's what I did. And I ended up doing probably 8 layover days.
Great.
Or 9 layover days.
Okay, very good.
It was, that was great.
Yeah, so it's basically you row a day and then you take a day off. And you row a day and then you take a day off. That's a lovely schedule.
That's what I was trying for. And my layover days were really just so wonderful. I had time to, you know, take a break, sit back, relax, reorganize if I needed to do so, work on the boat if I needed to do so. It gave me extra time to do various things.
Yeah.
And I really tried to take the most advantage of it. And you know, I bought a special pair of binoculars for that trip. And I've never seen anything like it. These binoculars are just a marvel of technology.
How so?
Well, they're made by Canon.
Okay.
And they're called Canon IS. And what they do is, if you push the button, you know, they're 10x. You know, that's a long lens. And you cannot hold that steady with your hand. I don't care how good you are.
Yeah.
You can't do it. And if you push the button on these, an electronic stabilization system goes into effect, and now they're rock solid.
Wow. How cool is that?
Well, it's really cool for Grand Canyon. So now you have a 10x binocular that you can really reach out there and see stuff, and it's rock solid.
That's amazing.
Man, it was just lovely. And whenever I'm scouting a rapid or doing something from the water, you know, being lazy, I don't want to pull over. I'll just get those binoculars out and check it out. Well, I had them easily accessible, so I'd open the lid and pull them out and start looking around. And then there all the wildlife that's on the shore as you're drifting by. I would pull those out and, you know, watch the bighorn and the birds and stuff down by the beach. It was lovely.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it's the neatest thing I've ever taken down the river.
Wow.
Those Canon binoculars.
That sounds like a highlight of your trip.
It was great. I used them at night. I don't set up a tent. I just have a cot in wet sand.
Okay.
And I was careful about choosing beaches or campsites that had good, flat, wet sand, because that's where I lived. I didn't go up to the beach at all. No reason to. And I would, you know, set up my cot in wet sand. And then at night, you know, I would do everything right there, cooking, everything. And then when it came nighttime, I would lay in the cot, and gravity would hold the binoculars, you know, right there on my face. So I didn't even have to hold them up. Wow. And then I would sit there and look at the night sky for an hour or so every night. It was just spectacular. And the clearest skies in the world, I think, are in Grand Canyon. And it was a real joy to look up at the night sky. It was, and those binoculars made it possible.
Nice.
Yes.
Let's look at highlights of the trip. What other highlights do you recall on this trip?
Tom, the whole trip was the highlight of my life.
Lovely.
I'm picking out one thing or another that was all just over the top spectacular. Every inch of river was just pure joy for me. I had no trepidation about anything on this trip. I got in trouble a time or two, but you know, that's normal. That comes along with a trip of any kind. And I got my ass kicked badly at Dubendorf, almost drowned in there.
Oh yeah, tell me about that.
Jesus. Well, you know, I'm lazy. I thought, well, I don't need to scout Dubendorf. Yeah, it changed, but how much could it have changed? I mean, come on. So anyway, I come up over the top of the hill there, left. You couldn't go right because the water was way too low for that.
Well, also, and, with Dubendorf, now the right run, the old right run to the right of the island at higher water, that's all gone now because there's a debris fan that comes right on out across. Now it's going to take a good amount of water to blow that out and open that back up again.
Well, that's probably true. I didn't scout it, but I know that I could go left. So anyway, I line up into the tongue and I get up, and you know, I'm standing up so I can see what I'm going to run. And there was a big hole that I really didn't want to go into down below. So I moved off to the right a little bit. And what I didn't see or didn't know was that there was a major pour over right there in the middle of the river. I mean, really a big one. And all of a sudden, man, the boat just dives down deep into a dark black hole.
Were you going sideways at that time, or had you straightened back around?
I was straight ahead.
Okay.
But, it dove down into it, and then it shot the raft straight up into the air, all the way out of the water, and just blew me off the boat. And as I'm falling backwards off the boat, I'm looking up, and it looks, and it, the boat is straight up into the sky and was turning, had a slow turn, and it was going to come down right on top of me. And I thought, what the hell is going on here? I'm in the water. And then a wave hit and took me down all the way under the water. And now I'm getting slammed around on the rocks at the bottom of the river. And I fully expected that the raft was going to be flipped because it was going that way when I lost sight of it. And then I finally came back up and got some air and noticed that it was still right side up, surprisingly. So I swam for it. But I couldn't get there because a wave took me back down. We're in the maw of the rapid now. And the wave took me back down and slammed me on the rocks again and came up. And that went on. That happened one more time. And then finally, the boat, I came back up and the boat's 10 feet away. So I swim real hard and finally got to it and held on to it through the bottom waves and got you know, slammed around pretty good, but at least not on the rocks. And I pulled myself up on the boat, and there was a group over there on River Wright having lunch or camping. It was a commercial outfit, and they had all run to their boats, and they were going to come out and fish my drowned ass out of the water. And I saw them doing that, so I got up on top of the boat and waved at them, said, "Don't come, don't come, I'm alive." So they were going, they were just standing there like, whoa, how did he get back on his boat? So they quit on it, thank goodness, because I didn't want them, you know, out on the water for no good reason. So I ran into them down at Deer, and they were like, "Man, what happened to you in that rapid, man? Your boat went straight up in the air out of the water, all the way out of the water." I went, "Yeah, well, I just missed it." What can I say? I screwed up. I should not have rowed back to the middle of the river.
Yeah.
So the good news is I won't make that mistake again.
There you go. Well, maybe if I could be so bold as to say, maybe that's a good rapid to scout.
Yeah, I think I will next time. If there ever is that, I don't expect there will be another chance. But I'll
you
stop
never
from
know.
Bubendorf.
Yeah,
yeah. No, you don't. But actually, the park would. You know, I'm an ambassador for them down there. I help the park out any way that I can.
Yeah.
You know, if there's something I can do on a beach that'll make it better, there's something I can say to other people on the river that helps the park, I'll do it. You know, I love what they do. They don't get enough money. They don't get enough credit for the things that they do for the river, and I'll help them out any way that I can.
Cool. Hey, I want to ask you, now that the trip is behind you, what are you going to do different next time? What have you learned from this trip? Assuming you get another trip here in a year or two, what are you going to do different?
More physical therapy before I go.
Okay.
Get in better shape. It is peak physical exertion, and if I could have been in better shape, the first 3 or 4 days of it would have gone smoother. That's for sure.
That's a really good point, is to be physically fit. Not only on a solo trip, but on a trip in general.
Well, any trip down there, the more muscle you've got, the better tone you are. The easier it's going to be, the less pain you're going to have to endure during the trip when you don't want it.
Right.
Afterwards, I don't care.
Right. No, that's but on a short notice, these phone calls that come in with short notice starts, you don't have the time to do that.
No,
so that's a really good point there.
Well, the first 3 days were rough, but man, I did get fit fast.
Yeah, it's like living in the gym there.
Well, the other thing about it, which I was not expecting, was from all of my experience in the past, September has always been a quiet month down on the river. The crappy month is, late July and August.
Right, when the monsoons are.
The wind and the rain, and then September, it just magically calms down. Well, not this time.
Yeah, not this time.
The wind was blowing 25 knots upstream every day.
Oh, boy.
And it was rough going, and everybody had to deal with it. And it caught me off guard. I was not expecting that. And the first 3 days of it was really difficult. It hurt. And my muscles were tired, so I ate a lot of protein, as much protein as I could woof down without throwing it up. to get some, you know, get some protein into my system to replenish the muscle. But after about day four, it stopped getting worse and kind of stabilized. And then day five through seven, it started getting better. And then after that, I just got stronger and better and less pain the whole remainder of the trip.
Lovely. Any recommendations you might have for anybody who's contemplating a solo river trip in Grand Canyon?
Expect the unexpected.
Okay.
And be prepared for it. You can't load enough medical equipment and food. You have to have it. And if you don't, you could be in a world of trouble.
Hmm.
So you've got to have backup plans for food in case the worst happens. You know, you flip and all your food gets wet. And then you need to have at least two backups for water purification. It doesn't cost that much money and it could save your life.
Okay.
You have to be ready because it's just you.
Right.
The worst thing happens when there's no help around. That's just how it goes.
Yeah.
When everything's fine, there's the million boats around when it doesn't do you any good. When something goes wrong, there's nobody around. So on a solo trip, you're going to be by yourself quite a lot. A lot of the hours that you're on the river, the other row trips that are in your area are going to be moving at about the same pace, so you're not going to see them. And the only trips you see really are the motor rig trips,
right?
Because they're running ahead of you. And of course they have everything. So if something goes wrong, your best friend is a motor rig. And the one day when at Fern Glen, when I ran into those yellow boats again, they were all over me about camping, you know, in the wet sand and so forth. Well, that evening, a two boat Canyoneer motor rig trip came in. And they were, they needed a camp. They were running late and they were just begging. They were ready to beg. And I looked at them and I said, wait, hold on, stop. You don't have to. Look, man, I used to work for this company. And the guys just stopped and looked at me and they said, you what? I said, yeah. I used to drive those rigs, and they were like, oh my gosh, you're kidding me. So in they come, and we had a glorious fun evening.
Cool.
The passengers, there's like, well, they don't run full boats anymore. Nobody does. They only had about four or five people on each of those motor rigs.
Wow.
They'll carry 20, but they only had 10 or 12 people total. So at any rate, I got out my black light and we spent a good part of the evening scorpion hunting. And most of them had never even seen a scorpion. And so to see one under a black light like that was pretty fantastic for them.
Cool.
So we did that and had a great fun time. And I didn't have to set up a kitchen. They fed me dinner and breakfast the next morning and they gave me some ice and some sodas. I don't drink, I do, but I don't drink on the river. But and so they gave me some ice and sodas and I just had everything I needed.
Lovely.
And I had lunch because they fix lunch in the morning. So I had lunch for the next day, so that was my layover day. So, man, it was easy going there at Fern Glen. Had a great fun time, beautiful side canyon, and I had a great place to sleep at night, nice and cool, no bugs, no ants, nothing.
Mm. Did you get some nice pictures on this trip?
I carried no cameras down this time.
Really?
As a photographer, that seems
That doesn't seem intuitive, Bruce. What's up with that?
No, it doesn't. Well, I've done, I made 47 trips down there, and I carried cameras every time, including the 10 solos before that. And the whole point of all of those trips was to shoot pictures.
Okay.
And do photography. But this trip, I made the decision that I was not going to be burdened with photography.
Interesting. Equipment. Okay. Sort of set free from that.
My whole concept and idea for the trip was to enjoy the Grand Canyon as best I could do it for the last time.
Wow.
So I carried no cameras.
Do you really think that will be your last river trip?
Well, I don't know.
Okay. It's not like you're saying, okay, I'm done with the Grand Canyon now. I'm moving on. There's other things in my life I want to do.
Well, I started this trip with the idea of this is it, not doing this again. I'm going to make the most of it. When the trip was over and I got back home and thought about it for a while, I'm thinking maybe I could do one more of these. So that's it.
Excellent.
I'm not going to push hard for it. I'm not going to worry about it. But if it comes up again and a special circumstance presents itself, I'll make the decision at that time. I'm 75 now. You know, I'm pushing up against the limit here.
Yeah, everybody times out. There's no doubt about that.
Could I do it at 80? The answer is maybe. If I stay in good condition, mm-hmm. and the stars line up, and my body doesn't have serious problems, could do it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I wish you well. May the permit gods smile on you.
Well, thank you, Tom, and you and Hazel as well. I hope to see you on the river. Glorious river trip would be to go down the river with you and Hazel. I can't think of anyone else I'd rather go with more.
You're very kind, and that's all we can do is just see what tomorrow brings.
Wouldn't it be a fun trip?
It would.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and end this V-Way podcast. Bruce, thank you so very much for letting us visit with you. It's been really fun.
Tom, I appreciate the opportunity to tell you about all that. You're welcome to call me and talk about river stuff anytime you like. I love doing it.
All right. Thanks, Bruce.